accession number 19629, Reel 6.
Sir Carol Mather, Reel 6.
You were saying that the formal use of artillery, particularly the creeping barrage, was something new to the desert army.
Mm. Yes, you see, the war up to then had been entirely mobile, but there wasn't one major overall plan for the defeat of the enemy. And Monty's object was to draw the enemy out, to keep the enemy on the Allemagne line, and to destroy the enemy on the spot, and to kill as many Germans as possible. And his famous remark, you know, when addressing some of these divisions, I think it was an Australian division, we are here to kill Germans, and that's my business. Even the Padres, one on weekdays and two on Sundays.
You mentioned also that there was air support. Was the air support coordinated with the artillery support? And if so, how was that done?
Oh, yes. And by this time, and we're talking about the beginning of the Battle of Allemagne, we had complete air superiority, really. And air officer commanding's headquarters was alongside Monty's headquarters. This was his tactical headquarters, you see. And so they, and Monty's dictum always was, we have to win the air war before we win the land war. And so they worked very close together. Although Mary Cunningham, well, Tedder was in Cairo, but Mary Cunningham was quite a tricky individual. And although on the face of it they got on pretty well together and was cooperation, there wasn't much love lost between them. But the Air Force did its stuff, and they were doing numerous forays and raids and bombing the German front line in coordination with the artillery.
So was this...
It was highly organized by this time.
Was this done primarily then by personal liaison between Montgomery and Cunningham at the highest level to sort out how things should be fitted together?
Well, Monty made the battle plan, and he asked the Air Force to support him in various ways, which of course they were very willing to do. Mm. And but it was reconnaissance, of course, daylight bombing and nighttime bombing, strafing enemy transport columns during the day, close support. It was close support of the army.
In what ways was Cunningham tricky? You said he was not easy to handle. Not easy to
I think he
with.
Was probably rather a jealous individual. He was a New Zealander. I got on with him very well, actually. He seemed to be a very nice chap. It was actually in the later stages, I think, in Northwest Europe, where he was rather kind of undermining Monty. Tedder certainly was. Tedder, who was then at Eisenhower's headquarters, was continually undermining Monty.
Do you have any idea why that was? Because in the Middle East, Tedder and Montgomery seemed to be cooperating quite,
yes, they did.
Quite well.
Yes.
Why should Tedder have become
alienated?
I know, it
was just jealousy. Yeah.
Personal jealousy, yeah. Do you think?
Personal differences in temperament and all that sort of. But I mean, there was absolutely no sign of anything wrong between the Air Force and the Army in those days.
What was Tedder's temperament like then? How would you compare Tedder to Montgomery in terms of temperament?
Well, I didn't know Tedder very well. I mean, I met him, but saw him. But I didn't really know him. He was, I think, a slightly introverted character. And he suffered from a bit of jealousy, I think. It was what it amounted to.
You also mentioned...
I expect Monty probably dealt with these people in a rather high-handed manner.
He did have a brisk manner, didn't he?
Something to do with it.
You also mentioned that he came under pressure from Churchill to launch his attack early, and that he resisted that pressure. How did he go about doing that? Did he simply ignore it, or did he reply to it with a reasoned argument?
Well, he was par excellence a professional soldier, and Churchill respected this. And he gave the advice to Churchill that he couldn't guarantee success unless they waited until this, that, and the other equipment arrived. And in the end, Churchill accepted it.
But Churchill does seem always to have been impatient, doesn't he?
Oh,
impatient
very.
To get on to the offensive.
Yeah. Well, he liked to try and fight the battle himself, you see. Having been an older man.
Well, having been on the Western Front.
On the Western Front, yes. Commanding a battalion. Yeah.
Commanding a battalion for a while. Was there any reaction to this pressure from Churchill, you know, in the headquarters? Did it create any sense of feeling about interference?
What do you mean by Monty?
Well, and amongst his staff.
Well, staff really weren't properly on the new. No, I mean, this was signals coming direct from the Prime Minister to Monty. Except the immediate staff. But Monty made it quite clear to his people that he wasn't going to be pushed around, and he wouldn't attack until he was ready.
You also mentioned the controversy between and the conflict between Montgomery and Lumsden, and
yes,
about the use of the armour. What was your own view of that? Was Lumsden being sticky, or was he just being prudent?
Well, he was being sticky, but one must remember that the armoured troops had suffered terribly in the desert up to that moment. The number of tanks and lives lost was very high. We were continually suffering from the fact that we were outgunned by the Germans. And when they started using the 88mm anti-tank guns in our anti-aircraft guns in a ground roll. Of course, they by far outgunned us. And so the armour commanders were very sensitive as to how the armour was to be used, because they didn't want to be exposed to being sitting ducks in the front line. Lumsden was given this armored corps with two armed divisions, which was Monty christened the Corps de Chasse. And the idea was that the infantry would clear gaps in the line, and the armor would then be pushed through and fan out the other side and roll up the, what he called the crumbling process, roll up the rest of the line from left to right. The main problem, as I saw it on the ground then, was I was well aware of this and reported to Monty, and that the armour wasn't moving up. But the main worry was the mines, the minefields, and some of the minefields are 5 miles deep, and we call them mine marshes, and lanes through these minefields. I mean, on a divisional front, there might be 4 lanes only cleared through these mined areas. Each lane had to be cleared by a man on their hands and knees with a bayonet. There weren't any anti-personnel mines, so once they found the mine, they could put it open and then someone would defuse it. And they were marked. I mean, they were very narrow. I mean, they were about as wide as from the fireplace here to the sofa.
So So it's just one tank width, isn't it?
One tank width. Mm. And, of course, when we tried to pass through these funnels, there were inevitably jams and congestion. Of course, they were a sitting target to enemy artillery. This was the problem. It was very difficult to break out. And, of course, the more tanks we lost in this way, the more congestion was caused. And so the armor was very reluctant to come up until they were certain they could break out into the clear desert, as it were. But Lumsden was quite a difficult character, and he didn't like Monty, didn't care for Monty. And
do you know why that was? What the reason for his dislike was?
It was just personal. Lumsden was a very kind of dapper, beautifully dressed, beautifully turned out man, and those who, I think he was a 12th Lancer. Those who were under his command greatly admired him. But he wanted to go his own way, and he resisted Monty's orders as to what he was to do or what he wasn't to do. And in the end, it came to a crisis, which I became involved in. And we set out, immediately after the breakthrough, we set out, I'm looking at my watch to see how we're getting on. We set out into the open desert, Monty and the Humber, and myself in a jeep, a rendezvous and an appointed map reference with Lumsden. And Monty thought I was a pretty ace navigator, having been in the deep desert, etc., etc. And I was navigating by a prismatic compass and the map reference. It was a wide open desert, no features at all.
Just dead wrecked and bearings.
So I got to what I thought was the likely spot, and I said, here we are, sir. This is it. Are you sure this is it? Absolutely certain. And we waited there for a bit. Of course, Lumsden didn't turn up. And Monty got extremely angry, started stumping around. And so then I was sent out to find Lumsden and bring him back to Monty. And when I eventually found it, Monty said, are you sure you're in the right place? And I said, yes, absolutely certain, this is where it should be. And we could see for miles around, so if anyone had been on the horizon, we'd seen them. He said, well, what's happened to Lumsden? I said, well, perhaps his navigator isn't very experienced. And so he said, maybe the case. When I eventually found Lumsden, I found my brother, Bill, was the navigator of this party. And we'd failed to meet.
What was his view of it?
Well, I'd been sent then to find Lumsden and tell him he had to report immediately to Monty. He was with another staff officer, and they were supposed to keep in touch by wireless with Monty. And my brother had this 11 set, I suppose it was, and a Windham aerial. Whenever he tried to put the Windham aerial, Lumsden said, whips out, and off they moved again.
do you think Lumsden was trying to turn a blind eye, or was he?
Yes, I think in a way he was. He was pretty elusive, actually.
Did your brother take Lumsden's part, or in the quarrel?
Well, he was at his headquarters, so yes, he might take his part a bit, actually.
And you mentioned also that the South African General Pienaar was anxious about casualties. Do you think was he justified?
Pienaar, well, the South Africans had very few men on the ground. Getting reinforcements was quite difficult. And Pienaar was casualty conscious. The South Africans, must be said, at that point had a pretty good beating on various occasions, and they'd lost a lot of men, a lot of equipment. And Pienaar started saying to me that he didn't believe in this plan of Monty's, you see. And so I didn't think I was very good auger for the battle. Mm-hmm. And then he started drawing figures in the sand showing how he would done it. And next moment, Monty arrived. And they disappeared in this dugout. And Monty came out saying, "Splendid chap, splendid chap. He's come wants to kill as many Germans as possible."
The business with London is again interesting because Montgomery has a reputation for being always anxious to minimise casualties.
Yes.
Yet in this case, it seems that it was Lumsden who was really rather more concerned to conserve his forces.
Yes. Lumsden was, really. I think he felt it was, this was a misuse of his armour. He wasn't really convinced that the plan was right, there was right use of armour. That's why I think he appeared to be reluctant.
Didn't agree with the strategy then?
Hmm?
He didn't agree with the strategy of the plan.
He didn't agree with the strategy, no.